You've probably heard the promise, quick, in-house sinus and snoring relief. Same solution, same timeline for everyone. The reality is no two people experience sinus and snoring problems the same, and your path to feeling better should reflect that. At Ohio ENT and Allergy Physicians, your care starts with a thorough evaluation by a local board-certified ENT physician. Sometimes an in-office option works, sometimes something else is better. The difference? Your plan is built around you. Visit OhioENTandAllergy.com and schedule an appointment today.
Off the ball.
Rugby.
She's like, yeah, it's a long time since we accepted more victories in Morpeth, considering the history and the success of the club. Players won't feel that way. They would have been going out to get a victory. They did get 2 points, which, you know, is no mean feat considering who they were playing.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. Paint March Green with Cadbury.
Well, here we are where nobody wanted to be. It's the day after a drab nil-all friendly draw with North Macedonia at Lansdowne Road. That's where ultimately our World Cup dreams went to die. But the collective nature of enduring all this grief that we've all experienced together might just be the tonic to get us all through it. I'm delighted to say I'm joined by our reporter / everything Irish football, Ben Symes. Very welcome along. How are you coping in this bit of a dreary week since the highs of Prague, at least before the game?
Every so often I think I'm coping, and then I just remember like 23 minutes, how I felt 23 minutes into the game in the Fortuna Arena, and that kind of feeling where I probably let myself go a little bit and started planning exactly how my summer was going to look like, going back and forth between Mexico and Atlanta, or Atlanta, I should say. Maybe I'll be in Atlanta now, who knows. Bergamo.
Is that Atlanta
Bergamo
exists?
Might sign a bit. Well, Bergamo, I suppose. Yeah. But,
it's like Arsenal.
Yeah, I just keep remembering it. Every couple of hours it'll pop into my head, that feeling, and I think that was exacerbated by watching Czechia come out on top in a penalty shootout again last night.
Yeah.
I'm in two minds about this. And the Ireland camp are in two minds about this as well. Like, we were speaking to Hamer and John O'Shea last night, and Hamer actually thinks it's, you know, it's quite good that we lost on penalties to the team that ended up going there. John O'Shea is in a bit more of, oh God, we were so close to that. We should have had that over the line.
Yeah.
Type of camp.
Yeah, I think it was a massive opportunity missed, and ultimately we'll look back at this as a huge opportunity to get to the first World Cup for the men's team since 2002. If you're wondering where Matthew Brennan is, we've sent him out on on-the-ground, hard-hitting journalism, fact-finding mission assignment. To be honest, I actually don't know where he is, but he is...
He's trying to find himself after the results. Yeah,
he's doing work, and he's going to jump on hopefully at some stage during the next 45, 50 minutes. But I suppose last night we'll just get straight into it, and we'll just, before we kind of look back at the whole kind of campaign as a whole, we'll go just straight for the game last night. Nil all against North Macedonia. You were there, Ben, up in the press box. I was down beside the Macedonian bench. What's your ultimate takeaway from last night?
My takeaways are that, as Gavin Kearney called it, the contractual obligations game happened. It was there. It happened. And it's gone.
Yeah.
That's pretty much you can say, really. Look, if we're being real, like, we kind of knew the game was going to pan out the way it did. North Macedonia tried to kill the game like 5 minutes in. There was a moment where I think it was the left back Sebastian Herrera, who was only second cap for Macedonia. He's only received citizenship quite recently.
Yeah, born in Colombia.
It's a mad story. He's now playing with Borac Banja Luka in Bosnia and Herzegovina. But the ball kind of looked like it was coming to his feet, and he just let it go by him for a throw in 5 minutes into the game. No need to do it other than to kill time.
Yeah,
and it told us all that we need to know about that game.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, look, it's not a game that's going to live long in the memory. But I think the things that happen outside of the game, like the fans turning up, the reception for Seamus Coleman, which we'll get on to, some of the post-match comments as well from Himrahil Grimson, from Jason Lumby, Boston Lowell. I think they're probably, the things we can probably take a bit more from. The game itself, nil all, Ireland struggled maybe in the first half, and there was a bit of a worrying parody game where, like, 10, 15 minutes where North Macedonia kept the ball and we seemed to kind of not be able to get it back. whether or not they never really created any chances, Kelleher was never tested in goal. Troy Parrott was given the RTE man of the match. Is that something you would have agreed with? Not that it really matters a whole boil.
Yeah, I don't really know who else you would have given it to. That's almost a token gesture of thank you for what you've done to brought us here. This is your first game back home. You did have two disallowed goals, I suppose.
Yeah, which one? The second one, which was looked to be onside, and
yeah, very tight.
Yeah, obviously there's no VAR, but I thought I thought Jason Knight was actually really good last night, and I think looking back, and it's something we can maybe get into, is that substitutions kind of killed us a bit in Prague, didn't it? Like, how did Jason Knight not get on the pitch?
Yeah, look, and it's wonderful in hindsight to say why wasn't Jason Knight on the pitch out there, but Matthew's not here to defend the corner here. Number one fan of Alan Brown, but I was a little bit confused when Alan Brown was coming on ahead of Jason Knight. I just think Jason Knight is a player that Hamer Hungrimson knows a lot more than Alan Brown. Actually, when I saw Alan Brown coming on, to be honest, in Prague, I thought he was coming on right wing back, and I thought Seamus Coleman might have ran his race. And I unfortunately watched that game back on Saturday afternoon.
I still can't bring myself to do it.
Yeah, look, I just wanted the different experience, because you do take in the game quite differently when you're there than when you watch it back. And if anything, it almost pounded the misery in certain chances, like the Adam Ida one at the end of the first half, extra time. It's like, if he can just get his body in between the man and the ball, like he has to go through Ida then to take the ball. It's a red card, then the pressure's pending on again. But that moment, the substitutions, and we spoke briefly over in Prague on Friday morning about the substitutions, but it's something that's probably haunted me a little bit, I would say, since. The Jimmy Dunn substitution, I thought, was maybe one that might have gone differently with Alan Brown shifting to right wing back, and maybe Jason Knight comes on then in central midfield. But I was not shocked, I was a little bit surprised at the time that Knight wasn't coming on into midfield when Jack Taylor got taken off. And like, Jack, let's be real as well, Jack Taylor only got taken off because he was on a yellow card.
Yeah.
I actually thought he was having quite a game matching them physically
in
the middle of the park. But yeah, Jason Knight is one who you can only take so much from a friendly. It really doesn't do anything to replicate what happens in a competitive match.
Yeah, but I
do think you can see signs from friendlies that you can take into better games, and Jason Knight is definitely something that maybe when the staff watch it back again, they'll think he could have come off the bench.
Yeah. Glenn Whelan was on Off the Ball Breakfast this morning, and Colin Buick asked him, like, you know, what's the difference between like friendlies and competitive matches? And I think a lot of the players even spoke last night. Yeah, it was hard to get yourself up after the crushing disappointment of the game last week. But Glenn Whelan made the point, and that, like, you know, you're putting on the green jersey, you're getting a chance to impress, you're getting a chance to represent your country, your family, your teammates, your coaches. Everyone has, you know, contributed to you to get that to that position. It was a strange one. I thought Jason Knight was maybe one of the standout players from last night. But I just want to speak briefly about the player beside him last night, Jason Malumbi, and his impact. And is he now the second midfielder in beside Josh Cullen? Because he's been excellent, I think, since coming back into the team.
Yeah, I think so. I can remember us talking a couple of weeks before the game against Czechia, and I can remember saying that I think Jason Malumbi is nailed on to play in that game, and I remember there was a little bit of a back and forth, because Matthew was kind of suggesting, oh, I don't know if he's so nailed on as he is. I think that question's kind of blown out of the water now.
Yeah.
After this international break. Just an interesting one, though, that I kind of thought when I was on the way home last night, is Boston Lowell could be a big player in this midfield going forward. I think we lack that profile of someone who's not afraid to get around and get stuck into tackles. I know Malumbi is that as well, but he's a bit more of a physical presence, and he's really tidy on the ball, Lowell, which is something that you don't know how kind of players are going to replicate that club form, international form. A lot of the times, there's no correlation between your club form and your international form. So I did kind of wonder how he would integrate that in. But I thought he looked quite tidy. And I think if he gets some minutes in, I think he would be in that camp in Spain if he's fit enough. And I think he'll be in.
If Stoke aren't in the playoffs.
If Stoke aren't in the playoffs, and which, look, it doesn't look like they're going to be. And then against Qatar and Canada, I think he might give a little bit of a headache for Hamer when the Nations League comes around in September. Obviously, we hope Josh Cullen will be back fit then as well. He'll be playing in the Championship more than likely if he stays with Burnley at the time too. So yeah, I'd say Malumbi has probably nailed his place, but
there's competition there.
Yeah, there's a lot more competition than there was 6 to 8 months ago, which is a big positive.
It's funny how quickly it kind of all changes. Like, I remember we talked about this in the office, the Luxembourg friendly last year, which again we've completely forgotten about. But I remember John Joe Patrick Finn came on in that game, and it just shows you, like, even if the friendlies don't mean much at the time, those substitutions and those decisions you make to pick those particular players do affect things in the long term. Like, could you imagine if Boston Lowell had maybe 2 caps or 3 caps? And okay, maybe if he hadn't had the injury, he could have been involved last week in again the game against Czechia. But he was on the bench that game, and I know he was only drafted into the squad that time because he was still playing 21s or whatever. So there's fine margins there, and we at least last night we got to see him. I thought at times he looked really, really good, as in like his first touch, and he linked up with Harvey Vail really nicely as well. He made his debut. He's played for all the Irish underage teams the whole way up. And you spoke to him last night?
Yeah, I spoke to him after the game, and basically just asked him how proud he was to finally make a senior debut after playing, as you said, every single level of underage football for Ireland.
Just over the moon, really. It's been a long time coming, and I'm thankful that I finally made my debut.
Obviously, you weren't fit enough to play in Prague on Thursday night. Did you feel good coming into camp as a whole? Obviously, we know there was a couple of back and forths, but the fitness issue.
Yeah, I felt fine. It's just more of just easing me in because I've had a couple of weeks out. So I think they've managed me very well. And yeah,
it's obviously been a long moment coming from career with playing for Ireland underage and now senior level with Stoke playing every week in the Championship. You must be delighted just to finally get this over the line and get the green jersey on.
Yeah, no, just happy to finally get it done. Obviously, like you said, playing for every age group and finally making it to the big stage. I'm just grateful, and thanks to God for making it happen.
Obviously, you're coming into a game where a little bit of a cagey affair, and probably a game where, let's be honest, neither side really want to play this sort of game. They want to be playing in the playoff final. What's that sort of experience like coming into?
I think it's a different type of experience. It's just more of a test of character, showing what they're about, even though, like you said, it's just both teams don't want them to be here. But just have to put that aside and keep playing football. And they were playing for our country, so we need to represent them well.
You came on in central midfield today. We've seen you play across a range of positions for your club this season. Is central midfield where you feel most comfortable?
I play anywhere. I'm not really too forced to where I play, but I've played centre mid most of my career, centre back. But as long as I'm on the pitch, I think I can give my all.
Obviously, you've got the camp coming up against Granada in May, and then you've Qatar and Canada coming up after. Are those camps maybe you're going up to get more caps under your belt before we play competitive fixtures again?
I think every time we have a camp, I think it's a proud moment to be called up to the international team. So don't have to look too much to it. Just get into it, do your best, and let the rest take care of yourself.
Yeah, that was Boston Lowell speaking to Rowan Ben Symes last night. Just interestingly, Glenn Whelan was very, very complimentary of him and thinks he will have a very high ceiling, I suppose, not just in the international game, but also for his club. I'm very delighted to say that Matthew Brennan has joined us on the line from... Where are you, Matthew?
I'm in an echoey hall that hopefully isn't too echoey in TUD Blanchardstown. Okay. At the moment, Andy Reid, former Republic of Ireland international, friend of the show, has been an Off the Ball Breakfast many times. Hopefully we'll have him on a green scene over the next little while. He's taking up the mantle, I suppose, that is being left by the kind of discontinuation of the FAI's transition year programme, which of course has seen some very familiar faces take part in it in recent times. On the men's side of things, off the top of my head, Andrew Omobabadele took part in it, Killian Phillips, as well as one other who's slipping my mind at this
Andrew
moment.
Moran.
Andy Moran. Andy yeah. Moran, that's it. Yeah. So, lots of a good little turnout so far. He was telling me there's another bunch of lads coming in later on today, another bunch of lads coming in next week. So there's definitely been a lot of interest in it, and plenty of different League of Ireland clubs represented based off the gear I've seen some of the young fellas coming in wearing. So I'm intrigued to kind of sit down with Andy later on and figure out exactly what his plans are for it, but there's definitely been an uptake from the get-go.
And Andy Reid is just doing this out of his own accord. He's just decided to kind of help it out and kind of do this on his own.
I'm not exactly sure the ins and outs of it. Like, it's not going to be, of course, I imagine it's not going to be a free thing. I imagine there's going to be some form of fee, but it seems as though there's a couple of guys who've been involved in either the FAI's own programme or a similar one in the past and have kind of gotten on board here. And Andy's coming on board with them to sort of be the face of it. And with the contacts that Andy does have over in England, working still with Nottingham Forest, in a role, kind of transitioning players from their academies into the first team. There's no better man really to give it a go. But I'm not actually entirely sure how it's come about. But as I said, I'm going to be sitting down later on, and we can go into the details of all of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that interview with Matthew and Andy Reid will be in your OTB Football podcast feed later on this evening. Matthew, you're also at the game last night.
Yeah.
What was your takeaways? Did you kind of indulge in this collective grief that I don't know, me and Ben kind of indulged in last night?
Yeah, I think so. I obviously haven't been listening to yourselves up till this point, unfortunately, as much as I would have loved to have been
busy
doing
man.
So I don't want to tread over any kind of already trodden ground, but yeah, it was a fairly drab affair. It was a fairly drab atmosphere, although a pretty good turnout. There was moments in the game, I suppose, where the crowd did get up for more for an attempt to sort of get the crowd going rather than a real true want, I feel. But no, the game itself, look, it is what it is. It's one of those, I actually really don't like that term, but it's one of those games that we hopefully don't have to think about for too long or experience ever again, to be totally honest. And of course, great, and don't want to take away from the occasion that it will be for the likes of Boston Lowell, who was speaking there just before I came on, and James Abanko as well, making his debut, and I suppose Harvey Vale playing for the first time in front of an Irish crowd, really, in Dublin. So some good moments in there, some nice little things to take away. We should have won the game. We were a better team than Macedonia, I wouldn't be reading into that too much, considering whatever lack of desire we had to be playing that game, I imagine it was kind of increased tenfold by them having to travel over.
So. Yeah, it was one of those things we might just forget. But I think there is some interesting kind of talking points. And I suppose when you just mentioned atmosphere there, Matthew, Seamus Coleman probably got the biggest kind of rouse, the biggest shout, the biggest roar, the biggest kind of show of appreciation of the night. Seamus Coleman, we don't know whether it's his last appearance in the green shirt. Noticeably, he went out in the field along with his kids. Ben, is this Seamus Coleman's last game in a green shirt, or are you begging him to stay on and look, give us two more years and like let's see what happens with Everton, but stay on with us and give us two more years for the Euros in 2028?
I think that you absolutely need James Coleman in the camp going forward, especially for Euro 2028. I think that squad is so young, and those leadership roles need to be filled, and you've the likes of John Egan, Robbie Brady in there as well. But Hamer Hal Grimson said himself last night that James is one of a kind. When asked if he'd ever met anyone like him, he said he hadn't. Like, this is the type of character that we're talking about here. Who
Frank Lampard said the same thing when he said kept everything up.
So this is the type of guy who, you know, you search for 50 years to be involved in your side. We have one. Hamer said on Saturday, age shouldn't be the reason why, a number shouldn't be the reason why he doesn't play in Euro 2028. And that's exactly the way I would feel as well. You know, when these players come around, It's not just what they do on the pitch, and we know Seamus is brilliant on the pitch. It's exactly what he does off the pitch. And I spoke to a couple of people who were watching the game from at home, and they said you could actually audibly hear on the microphones about 10 minutes in him shouting at players to lift the tempo and stuff like this in a friendly against North Macedonia, when you have the heartbreak and the disappointment of the game on Thursday night, to have someone who's experienced enough and knows exactly what to do to motivate the players to move on from that sort of defeat and be able to progress as a squad and realise the good things that Ireland have produced, not just in this campaign, but what happened last November was absolutely magical. And Seamus coming back into that camp, you know, it's no shock that Seamus got reintroduced back into the starting 11 against Portugal away and Portugal home and Hungary, and that's exactly what happened. He is a player who you just cannot afford to lose. You those players like that don't grow off trees. And if Seamus Coleman is gone, I really hope he's not. If that was his last fixture, it's going to take a long, long time for us to find someone of that calibre to fulfil that role.
Seamus Coleman's played like 10 minutes of Premier League football this year. Is that something that concerns you, Matthew, for the Irish team going forward? Like, are we too reliant on someone like Seamus Coleman?
I would say, as far as leadership goes, it's one of those intangible things that we don't really know what it means until you're kind of hit with it within the dressing room. I would say, as far as him retiring, potentially retiring, I would say, yeah, there is definitely a void that needs to be filled there. And I think there is a bit of over-reliance there as far as other players stepping up. But I suppose with them having to step up and not being able to do so to the right degree at the beginning of the campaign and him coming back in, maybe there's more of a kind of active observation or an active learning from what he does actually provide to a group that maybe certain members of the squad might be able to bring forward if he does go. From just a couple of things on that, as far as the reception goes, when he was leaving, it was unbelievable. Like, it was one of those things that the crowd actually got a bit of a lift towards the team after he went off because of the lift, the reception he got going. I don't think that'll be his last game. Whether he stays on for the Euros or not is another question. It's a different thing, but I think there's a world where we're playing Qatar, I think, in May in Dublin. I can see that being a send off for him if he is going to retire. But I think a mark of the man, really, when he was leaving the pitch, he didn't want to take in any of the not want to take in, but he didn't make a point of wandering around taking his time coming off. He ran off, he gave James Abanko a hug, the man who was coming on to make his Ireland debut, and let the moment be his. Yeah. As far as him as a footballer, I think I made this point on breakfast this morning, he the fact that his the character and the person that he is overshadows the quality of footballer that he's been over the last 10 years is actually more more of an addition to, or adds more weight, I suppose, to how big of a character he is and how good of a person he is, because his footballing ability is next to none, really. I mean, for the guts of 5 or 6 years there, he was playing for a decent Premier League team as part of kind of an era-defining fullback pairing with himself and Leighton Baines in that Everton system. So, yeah, what a player, what a man, and hopefully it's not the last we see of him.
Yeah, I think it was interesting. I was just catching up on some of the TV stuff from last night, and Richie Sadler was like, this is the end of Seamus Coleman, where I think Kenny Cunningham was like, let's just hold fire on that. Ben, you spoke to Hamer Hallgrimson last night about Seamus Coleman. What do you have to say?
I asked him before the game. Obviously, the team sheet drops and only 3 changes, and maybe people were expecting Seamus mightn't start, considering he played over 90 minutes in Prague on Thursday. But I asked Hamer, you know, who had been asked a lot of questions at the weekend about James Coleman's future. Does him being fit enough to start 2 games such a short period of time mean that all questions are quashed regarding his fitness?
Yeah, and his mentality. It's really, when you look at it from a scientific or fitness or whatever, not only he's not a 17-year-old, but he hadn't played much, and just to deliver that kind of performance is unique, and it shows his kind of pride to play in the green shirt and for his people. That yeah, mentality can overwin a lot of things. But he's here because he played really well, and he helps the team to play good. So that's the reason he's playing.
Yeah, that was him, Earl Grimson, talking to Ben about Seamus Coleman. For the future of this team, does Seamus Coleman, if he does decide to hang up the boots, Matthew, does he go straight in as a member of the coaching staff?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I think the way Hamer speaks about him in such a high regard, that would not be surprising in any way, shape or form. But what that actually looks like, I'm not sure. I don't know, is there much value in him just hanging around the place, you know, when he's not going to have any influence in a playing capacity. I do think that plays into kind of the buy-in he would get, I imagine, in the dressing room from the players, in that this guy is this age, he's still going out, he's still performing, he's still doing it for the badge, and he's still playing better than a lot of us have done over the last couple of years. So I think if you take that bit away, not that people would hold him in any less of a regard, but I just think maybe it might have less of an effect on the dressing room. So whether he goes straight in as a coach or not, I'm not sure. Yeah. It wouldn't be the ruination of the Republic of Ireland national team if he did, but I'd like to know the ins and outs of how that might look.
Matthew, thanks very much for hopping on the line. Continue doing your hard-hitting, fact-finding, groundbreaking journalism, and we'll speak to you again when you get back to the office.
Nice one, lads. See you later.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
At Byers Volkswagen, we've been family-owned since 1897, built on trust, driven by innovation. And now, buying your next Volkswagen is easier than ever. Shop online, customize your deal, and finalize everything from home. Just stop by to pick up the keys. It's that simple.
Drive home a new 2026 Volkswagen Tiguan S for $286 for 36 months with $2,499 due at signing.
The next generation shops online, and we're driving with them at ColumbusVolkswagen.com or visit us by the airport.
See dealer for details. Offer ends 4/30/2026.
Ben, is it something to be concerned about that Ireland have a bit of a lack of leadership that we need to keep a 37-year-old Seamus Coleman on?
Yeah. It is, yeah. I think, to be honest, there's no kind of way of painting it up differently. Like the leaders in that squad.
Who are the leaders?
So now? You've got Seamus Coleman, you have Robbie Brady.
Who missed
is,
so
is
much.
A big leader squad. You've Tidozi Ogbeni, who's a huge leader in that squad, who's not playing much club football. Someone who maybe is not as big a leader off the pitch, but is on the pitch, is Troy Parrott.
Yeah. So is this the new era? So him or said, is this like a chapter closing? This is now the team of Nathan Collins, Caoimhín Kelleher, Troy Parrott, Jake O'Brien, Darrow Shea, Jason Malumbi, Jason Knight.
Bene has still got a long to give. Yeah. A lot to give in his Ireland career.
Yeah, he's closer to 30 than the rest of those players, though.
He is, but I still think if you look at how Seamus Coleman has extended his Ireland career, I think that players like Tidozi Ogbeni would be willing to give absolutely every ounce and every drop that they have left for the green shirt for as long as they can. You're right, the chapter is closed and we're kind of in a new era, and I would be interested to see how long, you know, Seamus the big debate, but how long does Robbie Brady have left an Irish shirt? How long does John Egan have left an Irish shirt? Players who've given us huge memories throughout the years and are so key off the pitch in leadership roles, like, time doesn't wait for any man, and it's certainly not waiting for footballers, you know?
No. I suppose before we move on, the Green Scene and Off the Ball with Cadbury's, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. Is one of the big issues here that we actually don't have a better right wing back than Seamus Coleman?
Yeah, this is quite worrying. So James Abanko came on in that role last night and unfortunately went off injured. But James Abanko is the centre half.
Yeah.
For Watford. He's played right back in a back four sometimes. But not right wing back. Tidozi Ogbeni is capable of playing right wing back, but Tidozi Ogbeni is too important further up the pitch on the right hand side of that front three that he needs to play there. You can't sacrifice that and play him in the right wing back. You Festi Abusele, who is playing out in Turkey with Istanbul Başakşehir, who is not having a great run of it at the moment. I know Hamer is a fan of Festi, he does quite like him. So that is potentially where you're putting your hat on a player if Seamus is to step away. After that, you have Danny McNamara, who's kind of on the fringes at
Matt
Millwall.
Doherty.
You have Matt Doherty, who, again, we're talking about time waiting for no man, who is certainly towards the latter stage of his career and looks like he'll be stepping down to the Championship with Wolves. We'll be stepping down to the Championship with Wolves. Wolves will be stepping down. Whether he'll be staying with them or not is another question. You've Josh Honahan with Lincoln, who has played on the left really for the last few years, can play on the right hand side. And then you're getting into Andy Lyons. You're getting into Sam Curtis, who's playing in League Two at the moment. It's a real problem position for Ireland. And when you look at the players that are coming through, it's quite hard to find any solace really in it. If we're to stick to the same formation, which I believe we will be going forward, it's really tough to find the green shoots for anyone who could fill in there if Seamus is to step away. It would worry me if you were to stay up at night thinking, God, what position of the Ireland team is going to bother us for the next couple of years? That right wing back kind of sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, it's funny you just said stick to this formation, and I think that's what we'll be doing. And Stewie Byrne kind of said this last night after the game on the show. It was like, this is us now. This is like, we're back three, back five, two midfielders, two number 10s, or two kind of inside forwards, I guess, and a striker. And I agree that that's probably the best way to go. Mm. And we have found our identity. And for a long time, even under Stephen Kenny, we were kind of, we lacked having a footballing identity. And what is the Irish football identity? I think it's something like what we are right now. The right wing back position is a worry. We'd actually thought before this that the left wing back position would be more of a worry, but we seem to kind of have that covered with kind of Manning and Liam Scales and maybe Robbie Brady continues, like, let's see what happens there. Is this the dawn of a new era, and can Hamer adapt this team going forward, which he will need to, for maybe, let's say, the friendlies, but also the Nations League in the autumn?
Yeah, look, I think the identity of this team is very clear at the moment, and I don't think it's going to change all that much.
Evan Ferguson coming back in definitely is an option.
That's going to pose a lot of questions in terms of how does he shape that front three.
Yeah,
because it's been very clear, it's been a 5-2 midfield, and then there's three who are kind of spread out across the front, but there's always one lone man up front, and it's been Troy Parrott of the last couple of games. Ogbeni out far right hand side, and Azaz mainly has been out on the far left hand side. Has allowed to drift in a little bit against North Macedonia yesterday, but really hasn't been allowed to drift in the big game.
I think he's been picking up good pockets and stuff. And actually,
I think he can, but I
defensively,
think,
when we're in that shape, he's like tasked with whoever the right back is or the right wing back is. Can I just say on Azaz first? Let's say I don't know what he's like kind of off the field or anything like that, but he is the leader of this team in the midfield, I think. As in, that position where he plays as the number 10 or like inside left or inside right, and he is expected to get on the ball and pass forward. And he gets quite a lot of criticism sometimes. And I think he's in one of the most, that is like the toughest position you can get in. You're trying to get the ball from your midfield or your back three or your wing back, and you're also trying to turn and play that forward pass. And like that is such a tough position. Is there anything we can do to maybe get even more out of him? Because I think he's a really talented footballer. And when he drifted more into the middle last night, I know this is only friendly, but he made things happen. He played that ball through to Parrott. Can we get a bit more out of Finn Azaz? Can the team get a bit more out of Finn Azaz? Can the coaching staff get a bit more out of Finn Azaz by maybe putting him in a different position?
I think everyone can get a bit more out of Finn Azaz. I think Finn Azaz is a bit of a conundrum, where I was almost thinking if he was playing in a so-called better footballing team, like a team that are pushing for, say, at a club level, a league title type team, I think he would stand out a lot more. There was a couple of times in that game yesterday where he picked up brilliant pocket space, and whether it was Jason Oyder or Jason Malumbi just behind him, and look, I don't want to slight them, because Malumbi had an excellent game on Thursday night, and it's a friendly and you can't read too much friendlies, but the immediate instinct was to look to the side and use whoever was the wing back either side of them. And if they maybe took a little glance before the ball dropped into the free, they would have seen Finn Azaz have picked up a little pocket space in the 10.
Those passes are very hard to find. Nathan Collins put a brilliant one in late on into Harvey Vale, and then he flicked it around the corner, I think.
It was Adam Eda.
Yeah. I love that. Like, that pass through the lines is so hard, but if you can do it, you can right in on the opposition defence.
Mm.
We can definitely learn, and we can definitely grow from that, I think.
Yeah, I think Azaz will be quite often the man on the receiving end of those passes. I don't think he's going to be playing those passes.
No.
Partly also for the reason that if he's playing those passes, who the hell is ahead of him?
Yeah.
You know,
Harvey Vale?
Yeah, Vale is an interesting one. I thought he was quite good when he came off the bench, to be honest, yesterday. Look, very limited kind of time to show what he can do, but I think it was quite clear that he's technically very capable of playing for Ireland going forward. Kind of wanted him to get that free kick that Adam Eda hit.
Yeah, Adam Eda,
He'd taken a corner just before it, and you could see he has all the technique in the world to hit a dead ball. And I thought, that'll be an interesting one going forward. Maybe he just doesn't have the authority to say, it's my second cap. Yeah. I've only played 3 minutes for Ireland. Give me that ball.
Yeah.
Adam Eda.
He should have done.
Yeah, he can, but it's a lot easier said than done. But I think Adam Eda was the sixth most experienced player in an Ireland shirt in this camp, which is a bit mad to think. And if you look at some of the other names, top 10, you've Jason Malumbi, you've Troy Parrott, you've Nathan Collins. These guys are all, okay, Jason Malumbi is 26, but everyone else is 25 or under.
Yeah.
And they're in the top 10 most experienced players for Ireland in this camp, which is another keynote for how important the likes of Seamus Coleman is. Robbie Brady, John Egan and Seamus Coleman were all in there, and they were the only players above the age of 30, which is huge. But I think, look, to go back to the original question, Azaz, yes, I think a lot more can be got out of him, but I think it's funny, like, I hate to always go back to this argument, but his international football is so different. The pace of the game, the structure of the game is so different. You often have to take you're often kind of thinking of the defensive first mindset immediately from the off, and it's don't concede, don't concede, don't concede. So you're maybe not allowed the freedom to pick up. Yes, you can still at times pick up the pocket of space, but I think it's going to be firmly drilled in to Finn Azaz that, you know, number one role is control the possession.
Yeah.
Control
recycle
how the, yeah.
Okay.
And also control how the game is being played in and out of possession. Mm. So when that's out of possession for Ireland, that involves Finn Azaz basically playing as a left midfielder and pushing their right back, not allowing their right back to create any space and find the pass inside, allowing him to maybe make the pass to his right winger, and then you're needing Liam Scales or Ryan Manning or whoever's behind him to push up. And I think that's going to be a lot of what Finn Azaz or whoever is on that left-hand side, I think that's what their job is going to be primarily. And I think, look, Hamer spoke to a couple of us after the game last night.
What was that about?
This is basically after all the media kind of stuff got done, and he spoke to a couple of us journalists and reporters, and basically just wanted to reflect on the campaign as a whole and the identity of the team, and kind of just laid out exactly how Ireland have played and want to play going forward, and kind of saying these are the six key principles that Ireland are going to base the team around. And he spoke, one of them publicly was set pieces, which with John O'Shea, we spoke in the press conference, if you heard that last night, how that's a really key thing for us going forward. And kind of, you know, say for example with set pieces, every goal in that game against Czechia on Thursday night was from a set piece.
It's football, that's the way it's going.
It was a long throw, it was a corner kick, it was a penalty, and it was a free kick.
Yeah.
So it was a long throw which led to a penalty, then a penalty. It's a corner kick which leads to the own goal. It's a corner kick which leads to the penalty being given for Czechia, and then they scored a penalty, and then it's a free kick. So set pieces are the way the game is going forward. It's something that Ireland are going to have to base themselves around a lot. Controlling games out of possession is a big thing, and there was a clip that, you know, that I'd seen of the Portugal game. I'm trying the 80th minute, and it's a brilliant clip where, you know, if you're watching the game and when you're so caught up in the game, you see a team when they're penned in 11 men behind the ball and you think, God, they're really under the cosh here.
Mm.
But then when you watch the clip, we are so in control of what's happening,
yeah,
despite the fact that Portugal have the ball in the edge of the box. And every time someone tries to make a run to find a bit of space, an Ireland player is there and stops it. And a lot of time it was Seamus Coleman. Mm. Stops kind of the space, and eventually it's forced out to Rafael, and he ends up running out of play under pressure, which, yeah, knows like Benet. And yeah, look, Hamer basically wants to lay out, these are the principles how we want to play. And you hear so much from him and the staff in the Ireland camp saying how much we've improved. Sometimes you kind of go, look, they're always going to say that. They're never going to say we're regressing. Hamer is quite honest. So, you know, if we were seriously regressing, he probably would admit to it.
Mm.
But he basically just pulled up a load of metrics of where we were at the start when he took over and where we are now based on other teams around Europe. And they were all basically on those key 6 points that I know he had laid out to a couple of journalists about 18 months ago. And he was basically just refreshing people to say, this is what I told you. This is where we were then, and this is where we are now, and we have improved under every single metric. And one of the things brought up was that Czechia game, and how, you know, statistically they are, I think they're in the top three teams in Europe for aerial duels, duels on the ground, and set pieces. We actually outmatched them on them. Mm. And it was something that I think we were quite worried going into that game.
Yeah.
How would they be able to do that? And look, that did eventually change the game. Look, let's be honest, when Souček came, yeah, on, changed the dynamic completely. And we probably weren't able to cope with that when he was on the pitch as well. But
I think we were. I think we were coping well.
And we were,
I think,
even somewhat. But
the shape of the team, I thought we were fine. Like, I thought we were crossing from, yeah, silly positions. I, yeah, was like, grand.
It just added that extra dynamic into the game where they gave up on that kind of playing those little simple passes from Vladimir Darida to going, no, full on, let's, yeah, go at this. And I think it was also a lesson of, if you keep going at this, you will eventually score, which is what happened with them the other day. Mm-hmm. Another thing was, look, Ireland punched above their weight in this campaign. We finished second and we were seeded third. A bit hungry, you're probably a favourable second seed to get. They, yeah, still were seeded above us. There is green shoots. There's a lot of green shoots, yeah, going forward. And I think the identity of this team is very clear.
Yeah.
It's just, it's really all about now kicking on from that, and how do you kind of combine that with bringing players, the likes of Boston Lowell, who I think is going to be a huge player for Ireland going forward, Harvey Vale, who I think could be a big one as well, and then also keeping that leadership experience, the likes of Seamus Coleman, the likes of Chiro's like Benny, who we hope can get back playing for Fitness, the likes of Robbie Brady, who I don't think would be finished just yet for Ireland, keeping those players involved and fit and playing regularly for Ireland and hopefully for the clubs.
So to look back at the campaign as a whole, we started all this positivity against Hungary, and the very first game we had, maybe Paddy McCarthy came out and it's like, we are going to qualify. Emerald Grimson was saying previously to that this is it, like we're going to the World Cup, and then we're 2-0 down after 15 odd minutes, whatever it was. You're thinking, oh God, this is it all over again. We come back, we draw 2-2, then we go to Armenia, we lose 2-1, and we think, it's over already. Like, you can't go to Armenia and lose. You need to be taking 6 points off them. And then it all kind of slowly and eventually turns around. We come back to Dublin and we beat Armenia. We went to Portugal. Yeah. So we went to Portugal, which we lost very late on.
Yeah.
1-0. Even at that, we're still thinking, God, we need a bit of a miracle. Then we come back, we play Armenia. It's very stodgy. First 45 minutes, there's boos at halftime. I won't forget. I remember like people booing at halftime. They get Barsegian sent off in the second half. We win that game. Evan Ferguson scores.
Mysterious 52nd minute.
Yeah. Obviously, Hungary got their man sent off as well in the first game, Roland Zalai. Mm-hmm. So then, we have that's those four games, and then Troy Parra comes back into the camp and he says, well, we just have to win these games. Like, that's what we have to do. We have to beat Portugal, beat Hungary. And I mean, I remember being in the press conference that day. I think everyone turned around and looked at each other going, nah, no chance, no chance. And then they give us that amazing week, which we'll kind of go down in the annals of football history, where we beat Portugal at home 2-0. And then we go to Hungary and have the last minute winner from Troy Parrott. So as a campaign as a whole, we are where we should have been. We should, like, that was the thing. We were trying to get above Hungary and we just about did.
Mm. Yeah.
So what's your grading? Is it a A plus? Is it an A? Well, it's not an A plus, you don't qualify. Is it a B, C? What do we think? Like, what percentage? What are you giving him or the coach, the staff, the players?
If a report card has been put in front of me, it is probably B+.
Okay.
And look, it's not an A because you haven't qualified for the World Cup, which is really all that can warrant an A. There's a couple of things. There's obviously the now Forestieri, Troy Deeney, like Troy Parrott winner, where it will go down in folklore forever and everyone will just not talk about what happened after it in Prague. I think bouncing back from the start to the campaign is huge. Yeah. That is a huge turning point for this team.
These players showed character.
Absolutely. And the players have referenced all weekend, and Hamer did again yesterday, that the loss in Lisbon against Portugal was when everyone got back into the dressing room and said, hold on now, we can do this. We've just matched one of the best attacking teams in the world. And you know, a 91st minute winner from Ruben Neves kind of just felt like it was meant to be.
Yeah.
Diogo Jota's best friend, he reveals the tattoo, and there's not much you can do about that, but the players took so much confidence from that.
But we played minus football in that game. Like, we literally didn't cross the halfway line.
But I think some...
That was just a building block, though.
It was a building block, and I think the confidence had been so shot by the Armenia game that it was, look, let's just do everything we can to try and get a result in this game. And then the coaching staff and the players learned from that for the Portugal home game, and they exploited, look, Nuno Mendes being missing, let's not, you know, let's call a spade, that was huge because a lot of Ireland's tactic was play over the top of the fullbacks and not having Nuno Mendes there was quite big. It allowed Chiro's out Benny really to run riot down that right hand side, but they learned from that game in Lisbon that this is how you counter attack them. And the players and the coaching staff learned from that, and then again in Hungary to go 2-1 down and to have the character and the resilience to go, we've been here before in this campaign where we've been back to the wall and we've managed to drag ourselves back into this, which, let's not forget, that Saturday when we played Hungary in September, I think it was the 6th of September, we were all saying all we want to do is be in with a shout of getting to a playoff by the last game, going to that Budapest game, and we got that. And we were back against the wall, go back to get that, and then with 9 minutes to go against Hungary, managed to be back against the wall and do it again.
Yeah.
We went away to Czechia. I'm sorry, and I sound like I'm just glossing over it. That was an absolutely glorious moment that
I will never
forget that. Like, I was in crack off at the time in the airport, just going absolutely mental, getting phone calls from home.
Yeah.
You know, people, Irish people in the airport coming up and yeah. just hugging everyone, you know, yeah. really, really beautiful scenes. And then to go away to Czechia, and yes, it's such a big disappointment to what happened, but the start of that game and coming out from the blocks, and we had that moment where we lost the run of ourselves and we dreamed of going to Mexico and it got cruelly taken away from us. Yeah. All we could have asked for going into this campaign was to go to a playoff and be able to shout. That's what we were given. We saw green shoots of improvements and advancements from the team and what the team might look like going forward. We saw new players be blooded into the camp, especially recently. I mean, Harvey Vaile, like, he wasn't on anyone's radar a month ago and he came on in albeit under, you know, circumstances that we wouldn't want it to happen in Prague when Sami Schmadis gets sent off. For him to come on, you've Boston Lawal, who I feel like we've been waiting for his debut for a long, long time. He eventually makes his senior debut and looks like he's going to be a big player for this team going forward. James Abanko's made his debut. We're you know. Yeah.
So we're looking for the future now.
We're looking towards the future. And we have been given those green shoots towards
green
the future.
Shoots, yeah. And I suppose just before we kind of wrap up here, like that euphoric moment that we had in Budapest, this collective... Yeah, a moment of astonishment, of just like the best, like most, you know, unsurprising or most surprising thing that maybe has ever happened in Irish football in that time, I suppose. That we kind of rode that wave all the way to Prague. And I've seen people writing about it. I've seen people speaking on podcasts and stuff about the kind of Prague experience, and 6,000 Irish, descended on Prague for what essentially was a World Cup semi-final playoff, which we ultimately didn't win. But for you, has the feeling around this national team, has that changed?
Yeah.
Like it wasn't in a really bad place. I think Stephen Kenny brought it back to a slightly more positive place than what it was before that. But now it seems to have gone up another level.
Stephen Kenny, I think, started the process of reintegration between the feeling between the fans and the players and bringing young players through from under 18 level to under 20, under 19s, under 21s. The senior level, and a lot of this team were kind of given a pathway by Stephen Kenny and allowed us to kind of connect with this generation of players. And what this campaign has done is just moved that on a little step further, saying, yes, we know what we have, all this brilliant talent, but here's what they actually can do. And we're now at a stage of their development where they can compete. And Hamer said to me after the game yesterday, he feels it's only a matter of time before we're competing to win groups and we're competing to win games against the top teams, as we did against Portugal in November. And I think watching these players and the likes of Troy Parrott and Nathan Collins and Quevin Kelleher, who we heard about for so long before they ended up making the debuts for the senior team, seeing them grow and blossom and flourish into the players that they are at club level and senior level. And then if you combine with that with the sheer delirium that they managed to give us in Budapest, there's really no greater tonic to make sure that connection between the players, the staff, the playing group and the fans are really as one. And Prague was kind of that perfect bubble of everything, and the perfect city in the middle of Europe. A city that is just built for that, like, you know, to go and travel to there. And you know, we were there. Like, we saw Irish fans completely take over the city. It was amazing. And the players felt it. And the players have talked about so much this week about how that is the most important thing for them.
Yeah.
The connection with the fans and building on it and allowing to thank the fans back for all the support off the pitch and be able to give them performances on the pitch going forward. And I think we will see that from our team going forward. And it's so hard to take what you could have had and seeing Czechia win last night and knowing you were so close to the World Cup. But I think you just have to look at the positive side of this and you have to take the green shoots out of it and say, look, we are more than likely going to be involved in the Euros in 2028. Hey, touch wood
here.
Hamer Hallgrímsson lost a World Cup playoff with Iceland when he was on the coaching staff in 2014 to Croatia. Turned it around, qualified for Euro 2016, beat England, which was a brilliant moment for us. We didn't even know Hamer Hallgrímsson back then, and he gave us one of the best moments of our lives back then. And then managed to qualify for the World Cup in Russia in 2018. Drew with Argentina in the opening game out there. If I'm going to take anything from this, I'm going to take that he's going to replicate with that. And I will see you in Paraguay and then Morocco and then maybe even Spain and Portugal. Who knows in 2030. But you have to take those green shoots from this campaign. And there have been plenty.
Yeah,
it's really hard to say at the moment, but there have been plenty.
Yeah, I think this is like I think there's like another new era of supporting this Irish football team. I know some people criticised the amount of people that went to Prague for the game, but I think just people want to be part of a moment. And, and in sport, unfortunately, like, unless you're supporting like Real Madrid, Barcelona, I don't know, Manchester City and Liverpool and Manchester United in years gone by, those teams kind of win all the time. But like most of sport is disappointing. And what we felt last Thursday in the penalty shootout, and what we even felt last night when we seen Czechia go through against on penalties against Denmark, like those sickening moments will make those good moments even sweeter. And unfortunately, you just have to suffer as an Irish football fan. You don't get the chance to sign someone. You don't get the chance to be at every major tournament like some of the big nations out there. But that's going to make it all the sweeter. It's going to make it all the better for when we do get there. And like, you know, we should get to Euro 2028. We will have games here in Dublin, and providing we have a good run in the group and we finish high enough, we'll have playing home games here in Dublin for that tournament. It's a really exciting couple of years. Okay, we have the friendlies of Grenada and Qatar and Canada and different countries over the next couple of months, and that's going to be a bit of a pain. We're going to have, you know, the debacle that's going to happen in the Nations League, but we will get to that. But for the next 2 years, this is such an exciting time to be part of this Irish team going forward. And we're going to hear all the commentaries here live on Off the Ball over the next 3 years. So all the way up to 2028 and beyond, yeah, we'll be the home of Irish football. And it's an exciting time. The players that are at a great age, like you've got Parrott and Collins and Jake O'Brien and Quevin Keller, they're at a perfect age where, you know, they can kick this on. And the one thing that I will, you know, that will stick out to me from this last couple of days, this last week or so, is stick with us. Troy Parrott said, stick with us. And he's obviously came to be this bona fide superstar. He's also a leader of this team. And I think the Irish public can stick with this team, and they will, majority. And the ones who won't, well, good riddance to them, because this is going to be, you know, a train that you're one are going to hop on right from the very start. And I know our job is to hold these people to account and to be critical and to be journalists and stuff, but, you know, we are also fans, and the passion for Irish football is, yeah, it's kind of only ever growing more and more. We are a football nation. We are a football country. And that's something I've learned over the last week, that we can and we will be part of these major tournaments to come.
There was a comment left on our YouTube last week, because I said we're a football nation as well on the podcast on Friday, and someone commented saying that's nonsense. I think it's the essence that football captures the nation like nothing else can.
Yeah, there's nothing else that can get us like
the national team can.
Yeah.
And I have had so many texts from the last week of people who have no interest in football, yeah, who are texting me all week and texting me the most random stuff. Text me about Boston Wilds club form. People, yeah, who wouldn't even know who the likes of, you know,
yeah,
Adam Eda last week were texting me about Boston Wilds club form, and texting me all sorts of things. And people who would have had no interest in an Irish match for last week were texting me last night while I was at the game, yeah, while I was at Normas game. People sitting at home watching that, and people have bought in behind the team.
Yeah.
And before we finish, when I got home last night, I watched the Bosnia versus Italy penalty shootout. I'm delighted for Bosnia, and I'm looking at the scenes of Bosnia and Herzegovina qualifying and the streets of Sarajevo and Zenica being absolutely flooded.
Yeah.
And right after I finished it, it just popped up in my YouTube recommendations, Ireland versus Slovakia playoff from a few years ago.
Don't do it to yourself, Ben.
And I did, right?
Oh, you got
it. I watched the highlights. No. It's the complete opposite.
Did you ever cry?
No.
I actually felt like crying on Friday. I actually thought I needed to go home and cry.
So
it never came out, though.
I'll tell you, right? I watched the highlights, and I remember back to that night, and that was obviously during COVID in Bratislava. So I was at home and I watched that game, and I finished, and I went for a very long walk after that game, a very, very long walk, and it was freezing cold and it was pitch black. Mm. And I ended up walking along the beach, and I was like, it's so over.
Sure, clothes on?
I did.
Good.
I was like, this is so over. Like, we were on the cusp of qualifying for Euros. Where are we going to go with the future here? Where is this team going? You know, Dave McGoldrick was our best player in the park that night, and it looks like his career is kind of winding down. I know he's still playing club, but it ended up being the end of his international career. And it was like, where are we really going to go from here? And there is no sense of that feeling after this game.
No, that's a great way to put it.
There is huge disappointment. We haven't qualified for World Cup. But immediately, instead of just going, oh my God, we're all disconsolate, so much despair, this is agonising, it's so cruel.
Yeah.
We have that positivity and those green shoots from this campaign
yeah.
that we know when this situation comes around again, we will have learned from it and we have a team that are going to grow so much from this. And Hamer and Darroche said it on Monday, you know, it's the oldest cliche when it comes to losing a football match, but win or learn. And Ireland are going to learn so much from this.
Yeah.
And a team that are going to be able to bounce back. And the disappointment that we felt last Thursday is going to be absolutely minuscule in comparison to the joy that we will feel when we do qualify for a major tournament again.
Yeah,
Ben, I'm living for that.
Yeah, there's no better way to kind of end it on that. Just to remind you, the Green Scene and Off the Ball is with Cadbury's, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. Just before we go, I want to thank everybody who came up to us in Prague. A lot of people that are kind of fans of this podcast, fans of Off the Ball in general, and want to get involved. All the fans we chatted to in the Vox Pops, all the people that we met in pubs and bars all around the place, you were very, very good with your time and we really do appreciate it. So thank you very much. That is all we have time for on this episode of The Green Scene. But don't worry, we won't be ending. We won't be going anywhere at all. More episodes to come over the next couple of weeks and some even really fascinating and intriguing insights that we just haven't thought of as of yet, but they will be coming over the next few weeks. Thanks to producer Brona in the box as well. Thanks to Matthew for earlier on. Thank you, Ben. And we'll see you all again next week.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. Paint March Green with Cadbury.